Walk Across the Green by Colin Hayden Evans. With Christopher Good as Charles II, Bill Wallace as Thomas Wells, and William Edle as Sir Edmund Godfrey.
So then, it is my life they want, Mr. Wells. That is what you've come to tell me tonight.
There seems every evidence, Your Majesty.
And what such evidence would you have me consider?
It is true it is not yet of a very particular nature. Mm. But your sovereignty must always demand the utmost caution.
Were sovereignty all, my friend, the Almighty would suffice. It is only by the lowering of our sight that we are led most humbly to politics.
With respect, sir, politics is the necessary extension of your office.
Only one Charles has sat on this throne before me, and I tell you I do not intend his fate. If a man raises his faith against the crown, I will persecute him for it. Not from concern for my person alone, but for the protection of the realm. Yet I've never considered it my business to question the mere right to believe. A man's heart is invisible from the world until his actions make it otherwise. Come, man, for once I give you a yard, and you are satisfied with but an inch. You do your reputation no justice.
I have no reputation, sir, save in your opinion. I am anonymous by choice.
What do they call you, then, people who know what you do?
They see me as a servant of the king, no more.
A spy for the king.
So it is a word few would use to me.
I have little doubt. So, another plot, then. Not Puritans this time, not atheists, nor Anabaptists. This time it is to be Catholics. Odds fish, Wells, would you have the whole of creation baying for my blood?
There are some that feel strongly that way, sir.
Ah, Shaftesbury, is
no,
it?
No,
no. No denials, if you please. You always have a particular tone for Shaftesbury. An ease enters your more usual obsequiousness.
I name no man directly, sir.
Shaftesbury has no cause to doubt my rule, and still less dare.
Both your brother, the Duke of York, and the Queen belong to Rome, sir. There are those who see that as more than enough for suspicion.
And for that the papists would see me down. A Protestant king that allows his own wife to partake of their mass in her own chapel. I am to be persecuted for tolerance, perhaps. Her faith may well have kept her barren, for all we know. But I would be the last to deny the woman her consolation. No. If Shaftesbury is behind these rumours, it is because he wishes monarchy itself to die. The republican cause is the way of those who will rule in place of the throne. The monarch has always been the shield between the realm and the exercise of unprincipled power.
I fear that this time, sir, it may be different.
What, then, is this talk of my brother? My wife, even? The Queen herself plots, I suppose. Ah, so that is it.
A man who knows the secrets of others is a man hated by those who need to keep such concealment. I live comfortably in such hatred. It is an emotion often allied to fear, and I am a man that enjoys being feared. I rise in power through others' debasement. I answer to no one directly, yet willingly to any who direct me. My movements are never known. My night thoughts, the actions of others' days. But perhaps I tire with this, I'm sure. You are not to be interested in me. That is how I would wish it. I am solely my sovereign's eyes, for the moment. Should he ever cease to rule, of course, but that is not a matter that quite concerns us. Yet, let you come slowly to see for yourselves, always the better way of learning.
Your Majesty, sit with me, Marie. I see too little of you. It is something I regret.
I too, Madame.
The Duke of York keeps well.
He sends his love and respect.
Poor James.
He is ever in my prayers.
You must call me Catherine. No one does. The king never. I have not heard the word since leaving home. 18 years.
I should not.
Are our husbands not brothers? What does that make of us? We must be Catherine and Mary to each other. Otherwise, what friend shall I have?
I am honored. Catherine.
It sounds well. It is 5 years for you, even. Does your memory still speak of Italy?
My life is here now. I am not discontent. Sometimes only I feel the distant sun on my back. There is no warmth in this country.
Oh, the music is tedious this evening. Some nights they play like crickets, over and over the same silly sound. I prefer Spanish rhythms. Is not that Lady Pembroke? Without the Earl, I see.
Better she were without him altogether.
He is unkind, they say.
Those who know better would say brutal.
She dances like a turtle.
She is rarely without personal injury.
I did not mean to make light of it, Mary.
My apologies, madame.
No, you were right to say as you did. I shall talk to her sometime. So few do, it seems.
Rage lives naturally in the man. He has no remorse.
It is seen in her poor eyes. We must make it understood we shall befriend her. She is of the true faith, is she not?
Why else would Pembroke persecute her so? Ian Shaftesbury flanked the throne as if the king were merely caretaker.
This plot is one of many. They come, they go. You must rest in your faith, Mary.
They have tried to implicate Father Bedingfield. Is the Duke of York's own confessor to be pilloried then?
It came to nothing. They forged letters in his name, but the good Lord would not let him be seen in such a manner. The father took them straight to James, and he to Charles. There the matter rests.
With due respect, madame, Charles is a king. A Protestant king. He cannot let his heart rule. Catherine, there is danger all about you. This you must know.
What danger? From whom?
They build of our fate a gallows on which to hang us all. Madam, you should know that the hunt has begun. Guard yourself for all our sakes.
The king believes nothing of these lies. His very skepticism is our protection. Who then? Who should I fear?
It is as well you remain standing. I have business elsewhere. Be brief, sir, if you please.
My Lord Shaftesbury.
You travelled alone?
Oh, I was not seen, my Lord. Have no concern. The facts are now fully known, sir. It is, as you suspect, it is a treaty for all its secrecy, the king with Louis of France. The king has declared himself convinced of the truth of the Catholic religion and has resolved to declare it and reconcile himself with the Church of Rome as soon as the welfare of the kingdom will permit. In return, he has received £140,000 from Louis, with a French army at the ready to quell the uprising that will surely come when the facts become widely known. With respect, sir, now is the proper time to unleash the dogs.
With equal respect, Mr. Wells, if not necessarily with your approval, I would first make our dogs yet hungrier still. Mr. Israel Tong, do you understand you now stand before your king and his privy council, and that all answers to such questions that may be put to you are to be considered on your oath, and so binding?
It is why I am here, my lord.
What did he say?
He understands the terms under which he is to appear, Your Majesty.
Does he understand there is racing at Newmarket this week?
We all hope for a swift conclusion, sir.
Hmm.
Mr. Tong, we understand you're in possession of certain documents.
I am, sir. And very unpleasant at the reading they are.
You are merely required to present your evidence. Judgment is the prerogative of counsel. Perhaps you would apprise Mr. Tong of the matter, my Lord Shaftesbury.
As you will, sir. You are familiar with what is required of you, Mr. Tong.
I am here to protect the life of His Good Majesty. God preserve him!
Get on with it, man.
Proceed, Mr. Tong, if you will.
What I have discovered might well prove a great strain on the reasoning.
Pray grant us the benefit of the doubt, sir, if only on this one occasion. We will all do our very best.
There has come into my possession certain papers. Documents, you might say.
Are these the very same to which Lord Shaftesbury has already referred?
They are, Your Majesty.
Then we move at no pace at all. Progress, sir. I ask no more.
These papers are of an incriminating nature?
They indicate that His Majesty's life is in great danger from his enemies.
My enemies. Are there then to be no friends written down? If we are to value these accusations seriously, Shaftesbury, I consider that friends should not be so readily excluded. The state may well protect me from my foes, as it rightly will, but I fancy only my Maker will manage it with those who offer me their hand. But then I interrupt, perhaps?
If I may summarise, Your Majesty.
Willingly, my lord.
It is Mr. Tong's assertion, proved by the documentation in his possession, that a Catholic conspiracy is at present plotting not only Your Majesty's life, but the downfall of the Protestant throne itself.
Actions are evidence, my lord. Paper no more than accusation. I would wish to hear Mr. Tong's proof.
I scarce know where to begin, Your Majesty.
It is your ending rather than your beginning that is increasingly concerning us, Mr. Tong. Vacillation is one thing. Indeed, it is the very essence of diplomacy. But dull ignorance is quite another. If you cannot proceed, then we must suggest you return to your lodgings. I cannot imagine a man here would wish to miss his supper for such delay.
Mr. Tong, where are the documents in question?
They are in safekeeping with a friend.
And why did this friend not attend the hearing?
Well, he was unwell, sir.
You have brought him close to his death, perhaps. Might that be it?
He was attacked by a Jesuit, sir, on the road at night. He still keeps to his bed on account of the injuries.
What proof is there that the assailant was of the Catholic faith?
He wore a cloak, sir. Black. It is said the Jesuits wear such things.
Lord Shaftesbury.
We are here to examine a possible threat to the crown, Mr. Tong. Much as we might sympathize with your friend's misfortune, I fancy it is a matter that need concern no one beside a visiting physician. We are discussing conspiracy, are we not?
Of the worst kind, sir. Of the kind where the misnamed Pope Innocent maggots his Jesuit worms into the very heart of this country. Not simply to overthrow our blessed King Charles, he who sits before me now, but to place upon the throne his Popish brother James. But this is all well known.
To whom is it known, sir? That is what we are asking.
They planned the King's murder.
But how?
Stabbing! Poisoning! Some say by silver bullets. They are not particular as to the means, being more intent on the end, so to speak.
The end, sir, as even you must know, is common to us all. For the moment, means must take precedence, if you please.
Well, at Your Majesty's planned demise, if you will forgive the expression, every good Protestant in the land is to be cruelly murdered. They might equally be stabbed, drowned,
yes,
or perhaps put
yes,
to the...
You have strayed into ends again, Mr. Tong. Let us simply agree they are not generally wished well.
I can name names, Your Majesty.
No man present would fail to be obliged, I'm sure.
A Thomas Pickering and a John Grove, for a start. Pope maggots, both of them. Pickering is a monk and Grove a Jesuit. A combination to make even a strong man quail. They are designated to murder Your Majesty. If they fail, Sir George Wakenham, your own physician, is to be offered a full £10,000 to administer the poison.
The man's been doing little else for years. The sum seems a trifle extreme for rewarding the currently woeful state of medical science.
And proof of all this is in the document, Mr. Tong?
It is, sir, along with much besides. There is evidence of a priest that bought a knife whose blade is over 1 foot in length, and another associated with papists, but swore he would see that the king would eat no more Christmas pies.
I've always been especially fond of Christmas pies. Shaftesbury, I wish it known that I am unconvinced.
With respect, sir, we should see the documents.
The man is without them.
His friend should be summoned before us. What is your friend's name, Mr. Tong? May we know that, please?
Oates, my lord. His name is Titus Oates.
Piddle.
I tell you, Oates, they will not consider the document until it is a sworn statement.
Rot their bladders, all of them. How many nights did I sit up at the writing? Do they think evidence springs to mind so easily?
The king makes too light of it. He treats the matter as a lottery. We all die in the end, he says.
So we do. But the swiftness of its approach is a matter most sane men would wish to consider seriously, it seems to me.
We are in danger of losing their confidence. That is what I am saying. If we are to convince these lords that the Antichrist in Rome schemes to empty his chamber pot over every God-fearing head in the land, something more needs bringing to the matter.
What more is there? I got every popish name I can think of doing something or other. There is little further scope for their pestilence. Mind, I did leave out the use of bestialness. In deference to the king's probable taste, I could put that in most easily. It is said there is some verminous priest about Black Friars that has the most suspicious access to full-grown goats.
In the mind therein, they'd want the beast themselves to give evidence.
It seems to me it is myself that is doing all of the suggesting in this matter, Mr. Tong, that you are firmly otherwise.
You have not yet been called before them. Half of what the king says I do not understand. He may think of me as a saviour or a turnip, I know not. One thing they solely insist upon, and that is that we must swear these statements to be true before a justice of the peace. Only then will they even consider the facts as spoken.
That will mean copies. When things be made legal, it always means copies. I'll have to write it all over again.
You could add more. It is a critical juncture, Oates. That is what I have to say.
So's my arse.
It is the necessary nature of all conspiracies, whether real or imagined, that those involved believe they are acting for the greater good. Self-deception is to revolution what tinder is to fire. It begins that which finally consumes it. And the more moral the cause, the deeper the deception needed to support its ideals. It was said of Oates that he was hardly ever without a plot in his head and a pen in his hand. The one held the maggots, the other vented them. Small wonder his poor mother, when still heavy with his unborn weight, confessed later she hardly slept through the ordeal, dreaming always she was carrying the child of the devil. As later events were to suggest, the woman might not unreasonably have been considered to have possessed a very real talent for prophecy.
Be seated, gentlemen.
Well, Sir Edmund.
Justice Godfrey, if you please, it is my office.
As it is, my apologies, sir. Mr. Oates and I have every respect for high office. A justice of the
peace. You are here, sirs. I have received instructions.
We have all got those, it seems.
Mr. Oates is referring to our mutual friend.
I wish it known that I yet hold grave reservations about the matter.
I have grave reservations about my present lodgings, but that doesn't stop the roof from leaking. Grave reservations are neither here nor there.
I do not think you quite appreciate the full situation.
If I don't, then someone else will. I have never been a man that unnecessarily does the work of another. Now let's get on, I say.
The matter has been carefully considered, Justice Godfrey. You may rest assured.
The claims of the document seem unsubstantiated. Some would say outrageous.
It is not the claims that need concern you, sir. Merely that we stand by them as the truth of the matter.
There are some people slandered here I count as personal friends.
Papists? Perhaps I heard wrong, Mr. Tong. Did the good justice claim papists as his friends?
I put it to you, sir, that this construction of events is a pure fabrication, that it is itself treasonable.
The road has been chosen, sir. Like it or not, we are fellow travellers. You are not required to contribute to the facts, merely to authenticate what has already been recorded. It is but law, after all. It is the urgent wish of our mutual friend.
Very well. I fear we will all come to regret the actions of this day.
Both the council and I trust you are now fully recovered from your ordeal, Mr. Oates.
Ordeal, my lord?
You were extremely treated by a Jesuit, were you not? In the street, on your way to your lodging some days past.
Oh, so I was, sir. You are right. It happens on so many separate occasions, it is difficult for me to keep the matter in proper perspective.
He was identified by the colour of his cloak, if my memory serves me right.
They wear fearsome cloaks, Your Majesty. I sometimes think that even if there were not a man in them, the cloth alone could somehow do you harm.
You must try to put your fears behind you, Mr. Oates. I cannot imagine the rigours that Parliament would have to endure should the need ever arise to protect the general populace from marauding items of wearing apparel. I am well aware I digress, Shaftesbury. You may proceed, phlegm notwithstanding.
We are met here to discuss the naming of one Edward Coleman as a suspect in the conspiracy. Edward Coleman, as Your Majesty will know, is a secretary to your brother's wife, the Duchess of York.
Coleman is a papist, Your Majesty.
As is both the Queen and the Duke of York. Why do you not include their names, Mr. Oates?
There's no suggestion of Your Majesty's family.
I wish to ask of you, Mr. Oates, why the letters you present from different sources, it is claimed, seem all torn from the same length of paper. The writing, too, is of the same kind, the same hand, one might reasonably feel, with mistakes in the spelling to match. There is an explanation.
It is said that Jesuits can write with both hands, sir. They conceal the intentions of one hand by the use of the other. All priests are taught this.
To what end, pray?
To confuse us all, Your Majesty. To put doubt in place of certainty. That is the papist way.
Some might not unreasonably see it as little more than a circuitous route for unnecessarily wasting quantities of writing paper.
They have no care for such things, sir. It is said that in Rome they waste whole yards of paper for very little purpose.
Shaftesbury, it is my serious opinion that this man is mad.
With respect, sir, it should be said that the opinion of the council requires that his claims should be taken most seriously.
You were always a good friend to my family, Sir Edmund. I am more than grateful for your visit. Sit yourself by the fire, sir. Let me take your cloak.
My thanks, Coleman. The night is cold. But the matter which I would discuss with you is better served by dark. I am already in risk by being at your house.
Justice Godfrey at risk? I do not understand. Well, you are a highly respected man, sir. No one would wish to see you in such a position.
I will come to the point. Time is not with me. We are not of the same faith now, Coleman. Yet because of your father, I give you friendship. I am here to warn you on behalf of that friendship. Mm-hmm. There are matters, building, men who would see those of your belief paid dearly, and for no good reason. I am Protestant, as you know, and cannot consider my belief elsewhere, but justice I honor no less deeply. Edward, You have chosen against your father's faith. For reasons, I confess, never fully to have understood. But no man serves his own God by condemning that of another, and I shall not bring myself to do so now.
I am in danger? Is that what you're saying?
You have made no secret of your conviction that the king's brother should rule in his stead. You wish a Catholic throne.
By the natural order of things. I advocate no law-breaking. The king must one day surely die, as must we all. His brother could well succeed an empty throne. I claim no more.
I am here to tell you that there are those of another opinion. They say you directly plot the overthrow of the king.
Who says this?
Madmen, all. But it is a madness to which those more powerful would listen.
What must I do? Your always wise advice would be most welcome, sir.
The present stage is such that evidence seems still required. There may come a time when that too may pass. So ensure no thing against you can be found in writing.
There is nothing.
I do not accuse, merely warn. It is a decision you must take for yourself. Trust no man is what I advise.
Give me names. I would know who moves against me.
Names will not help you. It is the hearts of certain men that want your fall with others and put together. Those hearts are as powerful as they need be to make their ends. Do not be tempted into opposition, my friend. Simply guard yourself against attack. Innocence is your strongest weapon now, for without it you are truly lost.
Before my God, I am so innocent.
I regret that if the time should ever come, your God will be the last of whom they shall inquire.
How long, Edward?
Your Grace?
As my secretary, how long?
5, almost 6 years since first you were married to the Duke of York.
Why then do you not confide in me? We who hold to the true faith are all in danger, are we not?
Oh, you are surely safe, madam. Your husband is brother to the king, and God would not be so cruel as to see you brought low.
But Edward, my Edward Coleman, is he safe? I see your fear. Confide in me, I beg you.
It is best you do not know.
Yet I would.
I have been named at council before the king. They say I plot, that I wish your husband on the throne, and for that end I will seek the overthrow of King Charles.
And is this true?
Madam?
Are there papers?
I possess nothing of which I am ashamed.
I am a friend, Edward.
Oh, some, perhaps. Letters. They are safely kept.
I must ask you, on your oath, whether these letters do incriminate my husband. Oh, sweet Jesus, then we are lost.
Violence is to some men the very food of their lives. They may mourn its public appearance, convince themselves even that the sorrow they feel be real, but deep inside, in the often so small a space reserved for personal truth, always is there a secret smile at the prospect of another's open veins. It is difficult to say why it rightly should be so. Only that it seems to lend to our outward actions the kind of mixed necessity tainted water might afford the earth it feeds, not preventing growth so much as twisting it, making of it a shape to come, that a later posterity, busy with its own freshly believed innocence, will use to condemn the claimed excesses of the past. London. London presently sounds with the cries of those about their different gods' business. More armed with sword and cudgel than devotions, it might be said, and I fancy you'd be hard-pressed to find a soul that bothered to ask his maker for permission first. No. Always blood comes first, and only then the comforts of righteousness. This is how man does everything to other men. And never a blame attached. Thank God for such politics, I say. Without it, I would still be at my father's trade.
Dear Lord, give me the strength to see through this hour in protection of my husband. Keep him safe from all harm. And if the worst must be, let us meet together in thy precious sight. Amen. You make a great deal of noise for the time of night, Mr. Oates.
You know my name, then.
Is there a Catholic in all of London that does not expect a visit from you at some time or another?
Many of which seem to prefer their doors broken down than be willing to slide the bolt. Why would that be, do you think, Mistress Coleman?
Perhaps they feel the choice is more theirs than your own, it being their own house.
Your husband, madam. I'd speak with Mr. Edward Coleman.
He is not at home.
At this hour?
I give you my word.
The word of a papist. Yeah. Search the house, Constable.
Yes, sir.
Madam, your husband is a traitor.
The treason lies in the accusation. You are not a man fit enough to cross this threshold under other circumstances.
Where is papist? I shall not put the question to
you. I have nothing to do with such matters. My concern is with the household solely.
No one, Mr. Oates, but I found these. Letters in funny writing, and a lot more besides, in a burnt state. They might be written to the devil. It's the sort of writing he might understand, for I surely don't.
They were hidden.
The stone in the fireplace was loose. He might have forgotten them in his haste of burning the rest. They say the devil attacks the memory of those who smile on him, and in their following confusion...
Go and stand outside, Constable.
As you will, sir.
And do not talk to me again until we are back in the street.
Oh, thank you, sir.
May I see those, please?
No, madam, you may not. These are for other eyes.
It may be that I could explain...
There is small doubt you will be called upon to do so. That is for sure.
I'm especially fond of jelly, as you know.
And the damsons?
They're well. There was talk of denying me pies, did you hear?
Pies?
Some such talk. All part of this plot.
Had it been jelly, I imagine such a plot would warrant serious consideration. Mary was here to see me.
Madam, the affairs of state lie on me like a...
Like a king on a mistress? I shall not keep you long, sir. There is racing at Newmarket, I know, and Her Grace of Cleveland awaits your pleasure.
You promised, madam.
Yes, I am sorry. It is just there are times when I tire a little of your endless entertainments, Charles.
I'm not so well entertained. They're a foggy lot.
If I had given you children, would there have been a difference between us, do you suppose? I was taken as your wife only to breed a future for this country that I know. They have brought me about. It is said those were your first words on sight of me.
They're not altogether unpleasant creatures, bats. I've heard some people praise them on occasion.
Poor Charles.
I know it. It was never to your looks that I made the comparison in any event. I fancy it was the way you... clung to things.
Go no further. Soon I shall be truly damned with such small praise. I am sorry I cannot be a mother to your children. Truly. If you visited more often... So, you bring Edward Coleman to account?
And here I thought you wished only to share a jelly.
The man is innocent.
He may genuinely be more fool than knave, I know not. But that is always the greater danger. The truly guilty are more easily pardoned. They are solidly possessed of their thoughts, and in relenting imply a future surety. A fool is otherwise. Not knowing himself, he unwittingly thwarts all others' trust.
You would not have him condemned?
What concerns you with this, Coleman?
I have spoken to Mary. She's greatly concerned. Your brother, too.
James will have nothing to do with the man. He may share his faith, but will keep a distance.
Others are more guilty. That you must know.
Madam, we speak politics here, not catechism. Justice is kept merely to the word. Expediency is the only motive now, perhaps always.
It may not be what I would wish, but my life goes with the crown. If one is threatened, so must the other. For the sake of this country, I would protect both.
You cannot believe there is a plot by Rome to take the throne.
It is less to do with what I believe than what I am enjoined to believe. This is a plot to hide a further plot. The true enemy is closer to home. But to defeat them, I have to pretend a common purpose, and that purpose, I too regret, must be the alleged intent of those whose faith you share.
Even if such be untrue?
More especially so. Sadly, it is falsehood only that sways the minds of men. Madam, can you not recall a republic in this country and what that then meant? If I must hinder the repetition of such a passage with the lives of some who may be innocent, it must be. I would do so with my own, if called on.
But where is your heart, Charles? Wear that.
Madam, you cannot have a heart and be a king.
God will find your heart. When you both meet, on that day he will find it, and I know will not be displeased.
He will discover it to be a very foolish thing.
As Coleman's?
Coleman's he will find blind. Mine raw.
Yet is it not possible to help such a man in his blindness?
Odds fish, madam, we shall be into parables next. It is not impossible. That I will say.
You will try, then. Thank you, Your Majesty.
I must wait at Newmarket, then. I have enjoyed our afternoon. It was generous of you to think of dams and jelly. It is something I will remember.
Lady Cleveland as well?
Madam, all put together, not one of them has the qualities of my bat. Adieu.
Am I in danger, Charles? As queen? Oh, look not like that. Not from you, dear sir. You would tell me. Charles?
You admit travelling to France, Mr. Coleman?
Yes, my lord, I do.
You will raise your voice, sir. Keen hearing is not something with which I'm personally blessed, and there are others of the council who are worse besides. Speak clearly, then.
My apologies, Your Majesty.
And this trip to France was undertaken without a pass, without official permission, in fact.
That is so.
An infringement of the law in itself. For what purpose was this journey made?
There was no set purpose.
Was there a set purpose in your meetings with the Catholic priest, Father Lachaise, the French king's own confessor?
It was accidental, coincidence, no more.
A happy coincidence, would you say, Mr. Coleman?
It was not unpleasant, Your Majesty.
I'm glad to hear it. Much coincidence is otherwise, in my experience. Life is generally perverse, it has to be said. Else why would we need our religion?
With Your Majesty's permission.
Yes, yes, Shaftesbury. Am I not to be allowed an interjection, then?
On your return to this country, Mr. Coleman, did you commence a correspondence with this Father Lachaise? You would prefer I did not ask that question.
We must have an answer, sir. Letter writing alone is no incrimination, after all.
I cannot rightly recall, Your Majesty.
Do you not then recognize the letters I hold in my hand? They come from your own house, sir. They were secreted away in a hiding place of which even your own wife claims ignorance. Mr. Coleman, we will have an answer.
I need not ask your name, sir, but you would need know mine. It is Thomas Wells, and we share a mutual friend in Sir Edmund Godfrey.
Sir Edmund? Will he visit me?
He fears that would not be in your best interest, but he sends me in his place, hoping you will extend the same trust about what I have to say.
In the eyes of God, I am an innocent man, Mr. Wells.
Whatever. It is felt neither the King nor the Council would wish to see you convicted.
You are sure?
It is what I have come to say.
Sir Edmund says this?
More. He advises you be seen not to conceal anything, however damaging it may be felt the possible consequences. The outcome is already decided in your favour, but it must be known that you approach their inquiry with an open heart. If you lie to them, you will rob them of their true intent, which is to set you free.
But they have my letters.
Let me be frank. It is not your own protection they seek so much as that of the king's brother. The Duke of York's sympathy with Rome is undeniable, but there is an acknowledged gulf between mere conviction and political will. The council would tolerate the former most easily, but dare not the latter. You are secretary to the Duke's wife. That is close in terms of influence. By condemning you, they would condemn him, if only by implication, and that is not wished. I can tell you now, the king will not permit such. It is an odd situation, is it not, Mr. Coleman? You can only save yourself by admitting your guilt.
May I see my wife?
Why see her only? Tell them what they wish to hear, sir, and be home again. Is that not the better way?
Then you are willing to admit to treason.
Treason?
You have plotted to overthrow the crown, have you not?
But...
What did you wish to say, Mr. Coleman?
Simply that I understand why you have to ask me such things.
I fear, sir, it is an understanding that may well have brought you to ruin. Is that not clear to you?
No, but Mr. Wells has visited me.
Mr. Wells? Sir, it was the express wish of the council that you be allowed no visitors until the conclusion of this hearing. Your jailer will testify as much. We have mighty work on our hands, no less than the conversion of 3 separate kingdoms to the true faith, and by such the undoing of a pestilent heresy which has domineered over the Western world for far too long. Those are your words, Mr. Coleman?
They are, sir.
As they appear in one of the letters to Father Lachaise, a confessor to the French king.
I do not deny it.
I am obliged. And in another, dated April, you beg of this priest's help in getting money sent from the French king so that, in direct defiance of Parliament, let it be said, the Duke of York might be restored to his post as Lord High Admiral. Are you prepared to admit this too?
I am, sir.
What new story would you have us now believe?
I would call Sir Edmund Godfrey in my defence.
Treason has no defence. Justice Godfrey would be the first to acquaint you with the fact. You stand alone, as all traitors must.
Sir, is it treason to put God before country?
It should be said, Mr. Coleman, that in a civilised society the two are generally considered to go hand in hand. Somewhat understandably, the law permits but few exceptions.
It would seem, Your Majesty, that Mr. Coleman feels otherwise. Civilization lays with papal law, whilst his own country suffers under, what was the phrase? Ah, yes, a pestilent heresy.
I am sorry you feel that, Mr. Coleman. Truly, it would have pleased me so much to have had it otherwise.
Not an easy death, a traitor's death. It weren't meant to be, of course. Were it easy, it would only serve to encourage others. There are some who would more than willingly die as martyrs rather than continue to live in obscurity. There is no greater pride than laying down your life for your own sake whilst naming something other. Still, Coleman went better than most, I'll say that. They pulled him on the sled before a crowd of... 10,000 it could have been. And he wasn't that much alive when they finally went to work on him, so violent with the mob. It's a slow knife they use on such occasions, but with surprising grace. He hung well, too. I've seen many a pheasant in a pantry give worse account of itself. Straight he was. And he prayed to the last. Not so easy with a mouth full of his own vitals.
It was good of you to come, Sir Edmund, and looking as if you might need to keep to your bed yourself.
I wished to see if your father was better, and if the family itself needs support.
It was so good of you to send the coal. Warmth is a great comfort to the old ones.
Have you heard that I am to die?
Sir, what do you mean? For what?
All the city is in an uproar over what I have done.
You will have to be clearer, Sir Edmund.
The story is long, Mary, and I must tell it to someone. It is perhaps strange that I should come to you, such an old family friend, yet one who will not readily understand what is to happen or why. I am trusting you with what is left of my life. It may be measured only in days.
The true God give me strength, then, and I will do my best with his help.
In my capacity as magistrate a month ago, I took the sworn deputation of two men, Israel Tong and Titus Oates, knowing such to be but lies.
The first question I would put to you, then, I hope without offence, sir, is that why a man of honour should lend his name to such matters?
Others, men of power greater than my own, wished it so. They wanted lies made truth, and for that purpose used my reputation, knowing it would be widely believed.
Knowing you as I do, sir, I would have said it were more in your nature to refuse such a request.
The men that brought me the document, this Oates and Tong, told me that they had already presented it to the Privy Council itself, to the sight of the king, as it were. My verification was therefore seemingly a formality, as needed by the council. The document spoke of treason by others. Believing it seen at the highest levels, I did not report it to the Lord Chancellor, which would have been the usual course of events.
It sounds the more usual, sir, certainly. Though I am still somewhat behind your reasoning.
To not report such a document, Mary, is to become accused of its content through implication. It is seen as an attempt to conceal the nature of the accusation, and so become its accomplice. Thus I was, in turn, guilty of such treason.
That is not a law that has much to do with common sense, it seems to me.
There never was the intent to do me harm with it. But I was to know that it was known. And though I be as loyal in heart as I ever was, my actions of that day could always bring me low, should others wish it.
Why do you tell me this, Sir Edmund?
I would have someone know, and the least likely person to them. Soon it will be made to look different, and the days to come will take up the fashion of such a lie, as if it were the most natural of things to believe. But you will know, Mary, you will know what has truly happened to Sir Edmund Godfrey, and I pray that you let all that matter know that truth at the time. Beseech them to believe that he was no traitor to his country.
Insofar as our paths cross, you will not find my words wasted, sir. That you can rely upon.
The first result of all such, you see, is now this plot. Catholic men and women, children too, are being beaten, killed even on the strength of those lies. More prominent members of that faith are taken to prison and to their probable death.
These are not your doings, that I know. Sir Edmund Godfrey has no cause for reproach. That I will swear to, even before my Maker.
Mary, these are altogether deeper things. Hidden. I am in possession of matters that will be fatal to me.
But why should that be? No one would dispute your honour, sir. It is known so well.
I know the men that plan this, that wait their turn. I know their hidden purpose. I have spoken the truth of the matter to one whom they chose to accuse. And it is known. On that one occasion, my heart betrayed my head.
As it should in every good Christian, I say.
Except I fear my head is destined now to pay the price.
It's better we walk as we do. The streets of London are no place to be at present. The papists are like jackals.
My Lord Shaftesbury, I expect arrest.
I have told you your friends will stand close by.
Against treason? Who will stand between me and that?
Then our plans must be brought forward.
For the Lord's sake, just tell me what I must do.
You shall go abroad.
Abroad?
But a brief stay, sir, until our mutual friends have ordered the day of your safe return. Now, am I to be trusted in this matter, or say you not? That is to be your only decision.
I have no reason for distrust.
Good. Now, hear this. There is a man I would have you meet. He will not come to your house, which is some inconvenience, I grant, but would meet upon a public place, as we do here. On such a day, you shall take a walk across the green.
It is said that in all of London, in all England, there is no better a man for kicking another to death than Philip, Earl of Pembroke. I say it as a compliment, my dear Pembroke. It's well known that many a man has spent his last moments on earth staring up at the sole of one of your boots. And all quite deserving of such a fate, I have little doubt.
Can't recall most of them. It's an odd thing, dying. An odd thing. Hey, Shaftesbury?
No odder than life, I should imagine. Merely less accessible. Your wife has spoken with the Queen.
She'll not again. It cost her more than one of her ribs.
The Queen still has the King's ear on occasion.
Well, that's the only part of him she does have.
But you know what was said.
She told me well enough. She wouldn't do otherwise. But I can't recall it now.
We need to take care.
I've known many a man say that. Didn't stop him ending up with the pox, though. Some things in life are inevitable, sir. Being born, being miserable, and being done to death by something or other. Everything else you can name remains uncertain.
Yet in these matters I would strive to contain such uncertainty. You are still firm in the cause, sir.
Do I not look firm? These shoulders would bear the weight of England if called upon to do so.
England's weight can only be lightened by a republic. But such a republic will only come about when the need is seen to be so overwhelming that there is a little public choice in the matter. That is what I wish to impress upon you. We cannot elect ourselves before the man in the street concurs with the decision. That would be premature.
Pass the bottle, my lord. This end of the table is as dry as August.
Soon, the whole of England will see the Catholics as the sole threat. Everything fares well in such regard. Now, I would admit to first believing it might have taken longer. The Oates man has publicly accused the Queen of treason, and through her we will dredge in the Duke of York. And that leaves then only the King himself with his secret sympathies. This plot, Pembroke, is a poultice on the boil of a possible Catholic succession. We will slowly draw their poison, then feed it back to them through the wrath of the mob. And as that anger sweeps the streets clean, what else could we do, the higher orders, but step in to restore calm? Parliament will fall to us, as will the whole country. What say you?
I say we sleep in a whore's arms while she picks our back pockets. The Oates man is little better than a cloak wrapped around pig's will. It's time some nobility was introduced into the enterprise. We should take our stand now.
For that we must be firmly united.
And are we not, then?
There is a traitor among us.
What? What say you? Then I tell you he shall not be one for long. Who is such a man?
A highly respected man, a gentleman.
Name him, I say.
Godfrey is the name. It is Sir Edmund Godfrey.
Godfrey? What argument do we have there?
He warned Coleman, and the papist took it to the Queen. Had we not persuaded Coleman to later condemn himself, the matter would have taken a sorry turn.
But Godfrey has already fouled his own nest, has he not? His taking of the Oates affidavit makes him as ripe for treason as Coleman himself. Throw him to the Privy Council if you must. Why must he concern us?
Godfrey is a Protestant, Pembroke. A leading figure. Coleman, if you recall, was of the Papist persuasion. Martyring one of our own would seem a trifle eccentric, bearing in mind our current intentions, would you not say?
Eh?
Do you not think Godfrey might feel the need to actually defend himself against such accusations? To king and council, with his neck at stake, might he not suddenly and most inconveniently indulge the inclination to reveal his association with others?
What others?
He will speak of Shaftesbury and Pembroke, will he not? How they persuaded him, much against his Christian judgment, to witness the testimony of men whom the king now openly confesses to believe are wanton liars.
Well, if I recall, Pembroke did no persuading. Well, unless he was drunk at the time.
He would also tell them that the witnessing of such a statement was concealed from the Privy Council on the direct basis that I, Lord Shaftesbury himself, advised him so to do. His guilt will be seen to have arisen solely at my behest. Is the matter now clear, Pembroke?
It is better he does not appear before council. Innocent or not, it seems to me the man would be better dead, for his own sake. Eh, Shaftesbury?
You reach the heart of the matter. But Godfrey is not one that can so readily be made the victim of a common villain.
A blade's a blade, sir. Any man can push it home.
But the consequences may be different. Should a respected man die commonly, as at the hand of a thief, we might say, then grief alone will meet his demise. But should it be at the hands of those already hated, feared too, perhaps, then the outcome will be rage, and so an ultimate revenge. No, I think this man must seem to die by our currently most convenient papists. The victim is so decided, Pembroke, but the assassin must be a more careful choice. We need someone who, if discovered, can never implicate another. That leaves but few.
It leaves someone with a natural immunity. Perhaps someone above the common law? Like one of rank?
You recall your own trial for murder last March, was it not? Found guilty, then pardoned by your peers under benefit of clergy. The foreman of that jury was firmly set against you, sir, a sorry memory indeed.
A piece of swine shit.
That, Sir Edmund Godfrey.
That Godfrey? How much does he know of this?
I have already left him instructions. He is to take a walk. He will oblige. It now remains only for someone to meet him.
Godfrey!
Clear the way there. We need a table.
Here. You can't bring deadens in here. This is an airless recruit. Who are you, anyway?
I'm Constable Brown, and that smaller one is my properly designated companion. And if you don't stop your tongue, I'll put my finger around it.
I wasn't to know. Here, this table here. Oh, how was I to know, then? Totally strange man walks in with...
Right, up anyway. Here, where are you off to, then? You stay under my eye. I want your answers to how you found this man.
It wasn't exactly found. It's, it just sort of came across us as we were out walking. There's no deliberate intent to find anything.
Mr. Walker speaks for us both, then.
Well, I don't want him to. I need deputations from each in turn. That's the proper way.
It was raining hard, and we were making fast to reach the White Horse Tavern.
My only hope is we're in time to get as wet inside as out.
Well, that don't take long in your case, Bill Brummer.
Hey.
Here, Bill.
What?
No, here. What's that then?
Well, get yourself out of the way, and maybe I can tell you.
It's gloves. Good leather, too.
Well, take them.
And a cane. And a belt.
Now, careful, John. There's probably a gentleman further down in the ditch relieving himself. Come on, come on.
No, there's no one here, I can see.
There were soldiers here a day back. Hedgehog hunting they were. Looks the sort of items owned by an officer.
Yeah, well,
come on.
There ain't no soldiers now, is there? And by the time he comes back, you never know.
Here, wait, John. Further on, behind in brambles. What's that, then?
Ha! Shoes!
Shoes?
Yeah, by looks of things.
Sweet Jesus. There's feet in them. Holy shite, John, we've got a body on our hands.
I'll have a look.
No such thing. Generally suppose that he who finds these things is responsible for putting them there. It saves a constabulary looking further, doesn't it? Now, come on, put it all back where it was and let's make off. Come on.
No, it's duty, though, isn't it, Bill? Reporting matters of sudden death.
Not if it comes to result in our own, it ain't. Come on.
And you reported the matter to the church warden of this parish without any further delay?
Yes, sir. The only delay caused was informing Mr. Rawson here.
You are the landlord, sir?
I only offered him a shilling for the gloves because I thought...
What?
Mr. Rawson's well ahead of the events, Constable. Well, anyways, I didn't.
Oh, I can vouch for that. He didn't.
If
at all.
If the ink be thick, spit on it, man. It all must go down.
Now then, write this. A heavy man...
That he was.
Your deputation has finished, John Walters.
It's mine, sir.
In a manner of speaking, it has. Though it might later have to be returned.
Well, can we go home, then? Who is this man, Constable?
I have no knowledge of that. But pray God it does not turn out to be the one we all suspect it be.
Members of the jury, at this inquest into the death of Sir Edmund Godfrey, you will no doubt hear divers evidence about the possible causes of such demise. And when due time is given to the consideration of your verdict, you must base such only on what you hear in this place, excluding from your mind the street gossip that currently abounds. Did the deceased, in some fit of melancholia, forcefully take his own life from himself? Or do you suppose there is sufficient evidence to support the great crime of being murdered? That is what we are all gathered here together to conclude.
I'm Zacharias Gillard, the King's surgeon.
Well, sir, you examined the body on the morning following its discovery. Can you describe to the court its general appearance?
In addition to the two sword wounds, there was a swelling above the left ear, much as might be left by a knot from a tied piece of rope. The whole face was very much bruised.
Had this man been assaulted, in your opinion?
I never saw a man so beaten in my life. The entire chest and abdomen were coloured black and much swollen.
What I wish to establish, Mr. Skillard, is that the deceased could not have inflicted these wounds upon himself. By perhaps jumping from a height or such.
In my view, they were inflicted upon him, sir, through the use of some obtuse weapon.
Did you observe his neck?
It was distorted. You could well have taken the chin and set it on either shoulder.
And the nature of the wounds? You studied these also?
They were caused by a blade. One went in and stopped at a rib. The other place it was quite through the body.
Now, Mr. Skillard, do you think the cause of death was due to those wounds?
No, I do not. The wound went through his heart, and there would have appeared some blood, whereas there was none.
You are saying, then, that the subject was dead before the blade wounds were inflicted?
That is my view.
And by strangulation? Or by hanging?
I did not say either.
He expired spontaneously, perhaps?
He was a lean man, and his muscles, if he had died of the wound, would have been turgid.
I am still puzzled as to what you have concluded, sir.
There is evidence of death by strangulation.
How long had he been dead before you saw him, do you think?
4, perhaps 5 days. They might have kept him a week.
They?
They who did the deed, sir.
The murderers?
That must be the jury's conclusion.
And rightly so. Thank you, Mr. Skillard.
Constable Thomas Brown, sir.
Constable Brown, you said that upon the breeches of the deceased man there were found traces of candle wax. Are these fresh, would you say?
They look so, sir. Not old, anyways. But
the body was then elsewhere before being laid in the ditch at which it was found.
That's for others to say.
I am asking you your professional opinion, sir.
They might have been clerical. The candle, sir.
Such as a priest might use?
Such as anyone with a use for candles, sir.
Does a priest use such candles, Constable?
Insofar as rumour is a trustworthy source of information, he does, sir.
Thank you, Constable.
Whereas I, as foreman of this jury, do present our whole verdict upon this sad case. That the deceased, Sir Edmund Godfrey, has been set upon by persons unknown, all of whom, whatever their true number be, had been moved and seduced by the instigation of the devil. That they had strangled Godfrey with a piece of linen cloth, had hid the body until such time as their horrid purpose could be best fulfilled, and had so disposed of it publicly on Primrose Hill as to occasion someone more innocent than they to stumble across the site.
The matter had reached a most natural cliff edge. There was but little left to do but push. The linen cloth by which the deed was said to have been done and somehow slyly appeared as the jury sat, the unknown people, instigated by the devil, were as ripe for implication as you could ever hear, and it had but only needed for the body to have been found to have been wrapped in a purple cassock for the picture to be completed. That was difficult to contrive, perhaps, since no man wished the obvious too much so at such a time, but the public talk within the court, having given due and calm consideration to the matters heard, let it be said, revealed perhaps the one thing only upon which all men could with confidence rely. That fair and balanced judgment of England's native heart.
Holy shite, John. The frigging papists are rising.
It is a great sadness they chose this cell for you. Little ease, they call it, did you know? It would cause little ease to rot in such a place, eh? Miles Prance, then.
Who are you?
A friend.
I have prayed for such.
Then the good Lord has answered Mr. Prance and sent Thomas Wells. You do so stink, sir, pray. Stay among the straw.
What am I doing here?
Squatting in your own filth, your hands chained to your feet, and no doubt exceedingly miserable for the most part. That's what you're doing here, I should say.
But I'm an innocent man.
I regret an oft-heard sentiment these days, Mr. Prince. We live in most difficult times, it has to be said. There is an obstacle, however. It is not a plea that the King's Council is fond of hearing. They feel that anyone they call before them to give evidence is of necessity tainted with the very crime under consideration, else their acumen is in doubt in calling that person at all. I regret they have little time for innocence. Guilt is always far more welcome. It speeds the matter of judgment.
I have done nothing.
Let me then be straight with you. The Godfrey murder is 3 months done and not a soul apprehended. You will know yourself how loudly the mob bays. Time is running fast away. To be frank, Mr. Prance, we are sorely in need of someone to hang. I cannot put it straighter than that, I think.
The Lord be with me, then.
As you rightly say.
But I do not understand how I am to be seen guilty in this crime. That is all I say.
You are Catholic. At the present moment, a good start to the proceedings. It is vital, you see, that the Papists did for Justice Godfrey. That is what is required. And then there is your connection with the Queen.
I made jewellery for her. That is my trade, sir. I'm a jeweller.
A good one, I understand. For Jesuits in the main.
I have no knowledge of this man, Godfrey. I neither met him nor had any earthly reason to do him harm. That is what I told the council.
Yet, have been overheard to say you thought Edward Coleman an honest man. That honest man died a traitor's death, sir. I trust you shall not.
Am I really to die, then?
Only the good Lord knows for sure.
In my capacity as servant of the council, I would be inclined to say not.
I understand nothing of what you say. I am not to die.
I have little doubt you would die well, sir. I have the utmost respect for your abilities in that direction. Those of strong faith make splendid victims, in my experience. But you see, you are not really suitable. I mean no disrespect. I say that in your favour. You did not know Justice Godfrey as you came. Were not at any time seen in the vicinity of his house or the place of his death. No, you are not really suitable at all. In all probability, you are even quite innocent of this crime.
I am. That I am.
But that, of course, is my opinion solely. The council would have it otherwise, which is a matter for genuine regret, both to myself and to you, I am sure.
Oh, what shall I do, sir? Please tell me, I beg you.
You could pray. It brought me to your aid, after all.
There might be others. I did not see them. I did not say there is, but there are some that did know Godfrey, that I know.
Catholic others.
One named Green, that I can recall, and Edward Green.
Move on, sir, move on. Already I see hope for us. Green, you say?
This Green did know a priest.
It is a habit of Catholics to do so. Such a man would be suspect. No more.
They plotted to kill Godfrey. Ah. They did. That they did. Most foul.
And they told you, did they not, Mr. Prance? You have the details so close at hand.
I would have none of it, sir.
You would not. You are not a man for such things. It was obvious from the start. You are an honest jeweler, a reputable tradesman.
Thank God someone does believe me at last.
However, it would have taken more than two, Mr. Prance. Godfrey was a largish man, heavy, and the carting of him to Primrose Hill would best befit several. A jury would not believe two.
Now you mention it, sir. There were more. My memory's coming
you
back.
You see how we progress.
A berry and a hill. And there was a priest called Gerald. But the priest was ill with a fever all that week.
Well, we need to be fair to the facts. Certainly no jury would believe a man abed with fever could carry such a weight as Godfrey. But the priest plotted.
He may have, sir. It is true. He did. That he did. He plotted all the way.
Tomorrow, you will tell the council how it all came about, how these three plotted the death of Justice Godfrey and how they carried out such a crime. I would not tax your memory further at this time. A night alone will refresh you.
They will believe me. I know of no others that were taken into their confidence.
Witnesses can always be found to testify to what is true, Mr. Prance. Is that not one of the glories of the Christian way? Rest now, sir. Have no worry about witnesses.
And am I now to live? Is my life saved?
It is not unlikely. You know, I'm so glad I came to visit you today, to think that if I had disregarded my conscience in this matter, the truth may not have emerged at all. Yet here we sit, together, and in common fellowship, have found the way to at last vindicate your innocence. I have little doubt the council will be equally grateful to have avoided such an obvious miscarriage of justice. It is rightly said, Mr. Prance, no man need ever doubt the true efficacy of heartfelt prayer.
The river always looks the same, yet is not.
Your Majesty seems sad this evening.
Whitehall to Greenwich, to and fro. The journey by water always has the same effect. I cannot say why. Have matters not progressed far enough for you then, Shaftesbury? Must we open fresh arteries?
Sir?
That is why you dine with me tonight, is it not? We need more Catholics for your pyre.
I seek out only the guilty, sir, that you know.
And is now even Samuel Pepys to be considered such?
In his capacity as Secretary to the Admiralty, he was responsible for security at the port. As your Majesty will know, one of our prime suspects has been allowed to slip past and is abroad. There is possible complicity.
You are aware, I suppose, that Pepys was at Newmarket in my own company the weekend that the murder was committed.
I do not say that he did the deed, of course.
Unless it can be proved his carriage grew wings, perhaps. That, too, might come, of course.
You do not trust me, sir.
I distrust trust itself. You know Shaftesbury. It is first necessary to take the world very seriously before finally coming to consider its rewards unworthwhile. It is only the trivial in man that is ever dishonest.
He might be implicated, Pepys. I say no more.
As well as being a loyal supporter of my brother. A connection, perhaps. I would hear your answer, sir.
Whereas now we have only three, there could have been a fourth. That is all I say.
And these three, guilty, you presume?
They have been sent for trial.
And will, in their turn, be licked like candles. But our dark be made light, it will be said. It is the same. Always it looks the same.
This court will come to order. Gentlemen of this jury, murder is always a very great crime, but you may justly suppose that the one upon which you are currently set in judgment to be the most heinous and barbarous yet committed. The crime was enacted upon a gentleman and magistrate, and a Protestant magistrate at that. No greater infamy can be imagined. But imagine it you must, for it did take place, as we will all now know.
And Justice Godfrey would visit me personally. He recognized in me a person he could reliably trust with his troubles.
And what were those troubles, would you say, Mr. Owen?
My lord, the week before he was found missing, he came to me in great agitation and told me that several popish lords, some of whom who are now in the Tower, had threatened him on different occasions. He was in great fright, confided that he went in fear of his life from the entire popish party, that he'd been dogged for several days. He was of the suspicion they had others to do their work for them.
And did he know who these others were?
He did, sir. They were men called Green, Berry and Bill.
Do you not mean Hill?
Yes, I mean Hill.
And are these the very same men that presently stand in the dock?
Those are the three, sir.
Mr. Prance, you are a juror resident in Covent Garden.
I am, my lord.
Tell us about the meetings you had at the Plough Ale House.
My lord, it was about a fortnight or 3 weeks before the murder. There were several different meetings.
With who?
I met with Mr. Green, Mr. Berry and Mr. Hill. Hill and Green did entice me in, convincing me it was neither crime nor sin.
You're referring to the planned killing of Justice Godfrey?
Yes, sir. They said it would be a charitable act, since he was a busy man in terms of doing a great deal of mischief to others, and so it would be a deed of charity to do it.
Tell us what you know of them dogging Justice Godfrey into the fields.
Well, I heard all three say they would do so.
Which way did they dog him? What fields?
Red Lion Fields, sir, and those by Holborn.
You were witness to such?
I was at the Hill House the day they all met, before leaving, as it were.
But you did not accompany them?
I did not, sir. That was never my intent.
And all of this was under the direct instructions of popish lords and priests, you say?
It was, sir.
My lord, with your permission, I would question the witness.
Pray stay, sir. As a prisoner, you must wait your turn. You should have all free liberty to ask questions, but you must stay till the full evidence is done.
We must defend ourselves, sir, since we have no counsel. Can we not speak as might be necessary?
You are?
Lawrence Hill, Your Honour.
So you are. Very well, sir. But at this stage you must be brief.
My lord, in the first case I humbly suggest that Mr. Prance's evidence may not be used against us in any reasonable way, since he already stands perjured by his previous evidence.
But how so, sir? You will be equally aware this is Mr. Prance's first appearance before this court.
I would also remind you that the only test of what is reasonable rests with this bench.
I suppose, my lord, it's not unknown to you that he made an open confession before King's own counsel, and that such evidence then given does not support the present claims.
I know of no such prior given evidence to contradict what is now being said under oath.
He was under his oath before, sir.
He had originally accused you upon oath, but afterwards briefly confessed that it was not true. But that confession was not made under oath. How, then, is he to be seen guilty of perjury?
Oh, my lord, if a man can swear a thing and after deny it, he is certainly perjured.
Yet let us say, if a man had great horrors of his own conscience suddenly weighing upon him, as in this case of being a near party to a terrible crime, the guilt of such may well disorder his mind, so as to make him relent on what he previously sworn under oath. That is not perjury, so much as personal misfortune, I would say, which might merit our charity. I see no true cause here for such an accusation.
Well, it has to be said, such proceedings do go on, even when the outcome be suitably decided. Better you listen to me a while, I thought. It will help ease the hour. There followed several different persons, each in their turn explaining, not so surprisingly, how the accused could not be guilty of the crime, since they were generally elsewhere at the time. Be that as it may. It was not as if any of us actually doubted their innocence, but only that we acknowledged the necessity that someone must be hanged. Hanged in such course of events. Ah, now I take your time. We nearly miss the learned judge's summary.
Gentlemen of the jury, I must congratulate you upon arriving at a just and worthy verdict in this case. I must also say, you have reached the same decision I would have myself, had I been one of you. Indeed, if I had had but one word to utter before leaving this world, it would be to pronounce these three wretches guilty of the heinous crime for which they will now suffer the only worthy punishment. You have done well, gentlemen. As I say, like very good Christians, that is to say, very good Protestants.
Yes, well, sad it all is, of course. But I have to say, I have never put head to pillow yet without thinking much the same about a given day's events. Sadness, after all, is what we best do to one another, though none will like the hearing of it. No matter. What of the final outcome of the people in our tale? Of the king himself, not a great deal need be said. He died, like we all must do, but not before converting to the papist faith that always held his heart. And so he took his lifelong secret into the safety of his maker's keeping, some say accompanied by a protracted dose of the pox. Catherine, his queen, slipped into retirement like some fish might gratefully do from a hook, and was heard of little more. A woman misunderstood for little better reason than that she too misunderstood. Oates. Well, his lies did finally find him out, it must be said, yet only because the more official deceptions of the day required it so. Perjury became his crime, not so unexpectedly, and he enjoyed Newgate as his home for many a year thereafter. They would bring him out to the stocks annually for the punishment of the crowd. Those, you will recall, who had once crowned him as their saviour. No, say you not. How strange, say more, how usual human behaviour was always to common sense as rain is to a fire. Poor Lord Shaftesbury eventually overstepped his usual caution and had to flee abroad to save his aristocratic head. He came eventually to die in Holland, I believe. Some claim from a disappointed heart. I personally would be disappointed were it otherwise. He was a sour benefactor and will not be missed. Lady Pembroke, wife of our noble lord, left her gallant husband, you will no doubt be heartened to learn, for little better reason, perhaps, than that the poor woman was replete of further ribs to break. Pembroke himself lived on, immune in his rank, until finally drinking himself into his grave. Pity the liquor, I say, that had to swill through that liver. and then Wells. What of Wells, you inquire? Or not? Caring always being a most unreliable thing. I have to tell you, he's still very close. Oh, yes. Even now, as you listen. Wells is the grain in the wood of the chair on which you sit in judgment upon others. He is the current in the water that speeds your voyage to conquer lands other than your own. Wells is the justice that makes of men's violence a nation's virtue, the colour in the flag that drapes a patriot's coffin, the fog across a widow's tears, weaving of futility a sworn and worthy cause. Oh, there will always be a Wells, and always close at hand, since that is what the most have ever seemed to want. The majority ever prevail, after all, that is the lawful way. And so is justice seen to be done. Should the many choose the wrong can most easily become the right. And think not your own time so immune. Even as I talk, hidden worms feed at your most valued fruit. It is only ever the surface we protect, admire, and always with a chosen means that makes the kernel rot. Should I not know? But before you consider such at too much length, I pray you with me first rise in respect of our nation's proud anthem.
In A Walk Across the Green by Colin Hayden Evans, Charles II was played by Christopher Good, Thomas Wells by Bill Wallace, Sir Edmund Godfrey by William Eadle, and Titus Oates by Steve Hodson. Queen Catherine and Mary Gibbons were Marcia King, Mary Duchess of York was Kate Lynn Evans, Lord Shaftesbury, Eric Allen, Israel Tongue, John Bull. Edward Coleman and the foreman of the jury were John Moffat, Lord Pembroke and Lawrence Hill were Norman Eshley, Constable Brown and Justice Scroggs, Cornelius Garrett, Mr. Rawson and Miles Prance, Vincent Brimble, John Walters and Dr. Skillard, Anthony Jackson. The coroner was Peter Copley and Elizabeth Coleman, Janet Dale. A Walk Across the Green was directed in Bristol by Sean McLaughlin.